Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, we are Ustreaming tonight, so call all your friends, all right? It is Monday. It is getting crazier and crazier in this country. I have some stuff tonight that is pretty graphic and about some of the events that have occurred over the past 72 hours. It's pretty graphic. If you have young children, it probably would be good not to have them listen to the program tonight. Coming up in the third hour, I'm going to work backwards here. In the third hour, we're going to be talking about art. Art that concerns Jesus Christos. And remember, what's his name? Andre Serrano. Okay, well, that'll give you a clue as to what we're talking about here. That's coming up later. Also, Republican candidate for the Congress who likes to dress up in Nazi uniforms and do SS, Waffen-SS reenactments because, you know, it's fun. I'll tell you, this crop of Republicans that are out here, you couldn't make these people up and make them more demented if you tried. And the really bizarre part is they are running neck and neck with real human beings. It's pretty astonishing. But anyway, I want to thank Brad Friedman, who sat in for us for two nights. You know, once again, I get this avalanche of emails about the bombshells that he brought out on the program, which I believe he's written about at bradblog.com today. He had great guests, two excellent shows on Thursday and Friday. And every time we have him substitute, I get people who send me emails and say, why don't you hire him and you just quit? Well, I've said it before. I think Brad Friedman deserves his own program if he wants it. It's just talk radio or radio in general is so dominated by the spiders and the bastards and the right wingers that it's difficult for somebody as talented as Brad to get a toehold. Anyway, thanks, Brad. I appreciate it. I also have something I want to mention to you coming up next hour, something called the Fairy, as in We Folk, Sand Project. You might be interested in this. Let's start tonight with Bruce Enberg's missive, our economic affairs correspondent, a.k.a. Prairie 2. This is what he writes. The G7 finance ministers, that's the old money countries. See, it's G20 now. As soon as it's going to be G30. Eventually, it'll be G1, China. But right now it's G7. They met at the IMF World Bank meeting on Saturday and could come up with nothing to solve the currency war that the planet is sinking into, if you haven't been paying attention, and basically handed it off to the IMF to deal with. The IMF has already been intimidated by China over its manipulation of the Chinese yuan and is still ill-equipped to do anything. The IMF prefers to bully small countries who have been put in a cash flow crisis as a result of predation by the big corporations. They impose austerity measures and eliminate the victim's social safety net and then force that country into accepting even more predation by the same big corporations. That's one of the glories of capitalism for capitalists. China, in fact, treats the victims of the IMF much better and is building a broad-based coalition in China's favor, of course. The U.S. dollar continues to fall as it is becoming seen as inevitable that the Federal Reserve will start printing money in a big way. The weak dollar is driving up the price of grain in the United States, and on the Chicago Board of Trade, corn futures were up the limit again today. An awfully large chunk of the U.S. economy runs on corn, and this is going to create inflation pressure on the rest of the economy. That Christmas ham? It's going to cost a lot more, with the wholesale price already nearly double from last year, and inflation hasn't really taken hold yet. Officially, there is no inflation, with the Social Security Administration saying there would be no cost of living adjustment this year. Indeed, there's still talk of deflation, as the day of reckoning looms on trillions of dollars in commercial loans that will come due over the next few years. And these loans, of course, are on properties that are seriously underwater. Add to that, parade, too, always just inspires me to, I don't know, something. Add to that trillions in corporate junk bonds left over from the last round of mergers and acquisitions that are also coming due and not likely to be paid. Then, of course, there are millions of home foreclosures that may or may not be resolved. And that could drag down some pretty big banks. The Federal Reserve holds a couple of trillion of the toxic assets based on those mortgages. But they can't go bankrupt. It's just that our money might not be worth much after the reckoning. Gold is on the way up again, but I wouldn't run out and buy any unless you really have a lot of money to risk. If you do, you're likely to lose money on gold. I would, however, recommend adding canned hams to your portfolio. Prayer too. Well, I figured we would just start the program tonight on a real downer from our good friend Bruce Engberg. Canned ham. Do we have any canned hams over there in the... We don't? That's true. We do have... Did you say that over the air? Or is that just in my headphones? Yeah, we got some... halibut and salmon from our friends at what station in Kudo, K-U-D-O, in Anchorage? In Anchorage, Alaska, where our program is now carried. Shannon Moore and Kelly Walters, who's the producer? Right. And Kelly caught these incredible salmon and halibut, and was it halibut? I think it was halibut. And fixed them in a vacuum pack and sent them to us. And oh my God. Glenn Beck has a friend in California. Glenn Beck is really, there's no reason making fun of this psychopath anymore. He is really having a paranoid schizophrenic break with reality. I'm not trying to be funny. It's true. This guy is so far around the bend. He's not going to kill himself on television, much to my chagrin. He's going to go completely nuts and have a total nervous breakdown. That's my prediction. Now, I remember some time ago when the guy in California, Byron Williams, got involved in a shootout with California police on the freeway, I think California Highway Patrol, I think. He was on his way to commit mass murder at, remember that, what's the name of that place in California, the place where he was heading? Oh, damn it. What was it, Kathy? The Institute. Anyway, it'll come to me in a second. This guy, Williams, Byron Williams, was on his way to this institute, the Tides Foundation, that's right. It's a liberal organization that disperses money from rich people, rich liberals who feel guilty, because that's the only thing that motivates rich liberals is guilt. They're not politically motivated. Okay, so a couple of movie stars are. But, you know, when it comes to big money, the only way you can motivate a rich liberal is make the person feel hideously guilty, which is very difficult to do. But the Tides Foundation handles the money from those guilty rich liberals who want to do something good with the money. And Beck, of course, has been blasting on this organization for months. And Byron Williams was on his way there with weapons to kill people, lots of people, and to blow things up. And he was stopped by the police and got into a gunfight with them, wounded, I think, three of them. And he's now in the Santa Rita jail near Oakland. Well, I'll wait till the break, and then I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Psycho Killer. He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This guy, Byron Williams, has given a pair of jailhouse interviews, one with the conservativeexaminer.com and one, a more extensive one, at mediamatters.org, the liberal group. And Dana Milbank, writing at Washington Post Sunday, mentions this. Milbank is the author of the recently released Tears of a Clown, Glenn Beck and the Teabagging of America. But anyway, Byron Williams was caught on his way to the Tides Foundation to commit mass murder and got into a shootout with California law enforcement officers, and he's in jail now. No one was killed, but I think two or three of the officers were wounded. At the time, I went on the air that night and laid the blame for this completely on Glenn Beck. And matter of fact, I went nuts about it because I really think this son of a bitch Beck is a threat to America. Number one, he's not a clown anymore. This guy is really nuts, and he should be taken off the air and put someplace very quiet, and given the drugs as necessary to keep him sedated. But at the time, I said, you know, this guy is a Beck fan. This is what happens when you listen to Beck. And I got the usual snot drooling, dribbly, poorly written, misspelled words galore emails from a lot of right-wingers who took great offense at what I had said. Some of these cheesy right-wing blog sites had picked up the audio recording what I said that night and went all over the place, which is fine. I love that. Anyway, in his own words, Byron Williams says, quote, in these jailhouse interviews, I would have never started watching Fox News if it wasn't for the fact that Beck was on there. And it was the things he did, it was the things he exposed that blew my mind. I do enjoy Glenn Beck, and the reason why I enjoy that is because no other channel will speak about the same things that he's talking about. And if you go and investigate those things, you'll find out that they're true. Williams has pled not guilty to four counts of attempted murder of a police officer. And according to court documents, he had said he'd been on a mission to commit mass murder at the Tides Foundation, which happens also to be a favorite Beck target. So Williams has granted these interviews, and here's more of what he said. Quote, Beck is going to deny everything about violent approach, deny everything about conspiracies, but he'll give you every reason to believe it. He's protecting himself, and you can't blame him for that. But I understand what he's doing. End quote. Listening to Beck, Byron Williams explained, quote, you can pick up ideas, and you can get on your internet and just verify it, everything he says. Now, end quote. One of the ideas from Beck that Williams verified, quote, involved billionaire George Soros. Williams said he was inspired by Beck's shows about Soros, who Beck describes as a currency manipulator of Jewish ancestry who has, quote, disturbing hair in his nose, end quote. Beck also accused President Obama of lending $2 billion to Brazil's oil company Petrobras just after George Soros upped his stake in the company. Now, this is how crazy these goddamn right-wingers really are. Totally false internet rumor, but Beck picked up on it and amplified it, and it goes into these psychopaths like you, sir, listening in your car trying to find out what the left wing is talking about. I'm talking about you, you dumb bastard. And it's people like Byron Williams who pick up this stuff, see, and they go, oh. Anyway, Williams did more research, and he concluded that Soros and Obama had sabotaged the BP oil well in the Gulf of Mexico and caused the oil spill, which thereby helped the Brazilian company Petrobras. Now, these sick bastards believe this stuff, and Beck promotes it, feeds into it. I've been telling you people for months, Beck and the teabaggers in the right wing, they want murder in the streets. They want blood. They want white fighting black, gay fighting straight, left fighting right. Glenn Beck is a threat to everything in this country that still remains with any value at all. He needs to be removed from the air, sedated, and put someplace until he's well, which I don't think will ever happen. Byron Williams, this freak, who's now in jail, four counts of attempted murder. Byron Williams told the Examiner he already knew about the tides before he heard Beck speak about it back in June. But Williams said, to me, it was more of a confirmation of what I already knew. So Beck confirmed for this potential mass killer that the tides was some place that needed to be destroyed and that the people worked there needed to be murdered. So Williams was on his way to do it. Beck, who has encouraged his followers to hear what he is saying between the sentences. He always tells the people listening to his program to listen between the sentences. And that gave legitimacy to Williams' conspiracy theories. So Williams said this also. So now they've got Beck labeled as this guy who's trying to incite violence. And what I say is that if the truth incites violence, it means that we've been living too long in the lies. You know, when you become unemployed, desperate, you can no longer pay your bills, what do you think is going to happen? You know, for crying out loud, it's going to get worse and more people are going to get desperate, end quote. Particularly if they have some freak like Glenn Beck talking to them in the media. We'll be right back.
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. If you want the full story on Byron Williams and his interview to Media Matters, go to MikeMalloy.com. And under Mike's Daily Blog, which I don't write, Kathy writes. So why don't you change it to Kathy's Daily Blog? I haven't been writing anything lately. About three lines into it, you'll see. So, what is a progressive hunter? A progressive hunter, you know, like a deer hunter, a progressive hunter. Click and go to Media Matters and read the whole thing. I said back when this happened that this was a result of Glenn Beck getting inside the heads of equally crazy people, just like him. When you are really pathologically nuts, like Beck is, you don't do it for the money. You don't do it for the fame. You do it because you're crazy. He pretty much is a dry drunk, a dry drug user, but he's crazy. And it's very easy in these days in this country to find equally crazy people just waiting for Glenn Beck to lead them into hell. And Beck is more than willing to do it. He wants to see murder and mayhem. Now, frankly, Glenn Beck is a co-conspirator in this case in California. He should be jailed also and charged with co-conspiring with this poor dumb bastard Byron Williams, who thought he was hearing the voice of God, in an effort to commit murder at the Tides Foundation and against state troopers. Glenn Beck is a co-conspirator in this case. He should be in jail. He really should. Listening to Beck, Williams said, you can pick up ideas and you can get on your internet and verify it. Now, that's one. From today, Richard Scott McLeod of Brighton, Michigan, was arrested today on weapons charges and is under suspicion of potential threats against President Barack Obama. On the outside of the 48-year-old's vehicle were bumper stickers quoting Adolf Hitler. On the inside, police say there was a picture of Obama, a loaded gun, a bulletproof vest, and tips on how to build bombs. McLeod faces charges for illegally also possessing body armor and a loaded gun. He is currently behind bars at the Ingham County Jail. So this Glenn Beck fan had a gun, a bulletproof vest, a picture of Obama. He didn't know what Obama looks like. This is how dumb these bastards really are. That's a mindset of a Fox boob violent would-be assassin. Glenn Beck is trying to get people to assassinate the President of the United States and his family. Beck is trying to have this occur. And he's getting close to it. Now, what's Beck doing? Beck is setting up his defense. Because eventually this is all going to happen. And a prosecutor someplace is going to get an indictment against Glenn Beck for co-conspiring to commit murder. That's going to happen. Take it to the bank. Just like I said, this guy, Byron Williams, I said months ago when he was popped that he did it because Glenn Beck told him to do it. Glenn Beck is going to tell people to murder the president. Now, how does he tell people to do that? Well, like Byron Williams says, you've got to, like Glenn Beck says, you've got to listen to me between the sentences. You've got to listen. I'm here on a mission. God is leading me. I don't know what to do right now. All right, here's the latest thing. Here's his defense. This also is from Media Matters. This is back on Friday when Oliver Willis wrote, Glenn Beck went into new territory this morning telling his audience that he felt that possible toxins and poisons affecting his health could be traced to his studies of progressives. After detailing several recent health ailments he has been experiencing, he suggested that the poisons his doctors are looking for are linked to his attempts to, quote, understand the minds of progressives, end quote, which he termed, quote, drinking that poison, which others may not find poison, but I do because it is exact opposite of me. End quote. Now, this is what he said, quote, in the last 24 hours, I've been thinking about the doctor saying, we're looking for toxins, we're looking for poisons in your body. I know what they are. For 4 years, I've tried to understand the mind of what I believe are monsters. It started with Walter Lippmann. The first book that I closed and said, I can't read this anymore, was Walter Lippmann, and it was about how they can breed better people and how there are undesirables. I never finished the book. That was the first one. And for 4 years, I've been trying to understand the minds of people that I think are so misled, and they are the exact opposite of what I've tried to be, what I want to be, what I strive for, but I have done it because I have to. I have to understand it. I have to see what's, I have to try to understand, to explain to you what's coming, what's happening. And for my children, I also believe there are very misguided people, and I've been drinking that poison, which others may not find poison, but I do because it's the exact opposite of me, and I've been that which you gaze upon, you become, and I've been trying not to become that, and that is the internal struggle, and that is where I want to take it next. A warning to you, and an ask for specific help on something next. And I want you to know that there's a physical reason for all of this stuff I'm suffering. I don't know what it is yet, and neither do the doctors. We don't even know what all the symptoms are at this point. And that's what I'm going to be taking Monday and Tuesday off. I'm going out west to a hospital, and I'm going to be doing all kinds of tests on those 2 days just to get them all done. And they're going to look under every rock. So there's a physical reason. But I believe physical, mental, and spiritual are all tied. It is the, you can't injure the soul of someone and not have physical wounds appear eventually. This is something I believe in. You may not believe in that, but I do. A lot of physical things, a lot of mental things are from spiritual wounds and vice versa. And as I was laying in bed the other day and I closed that book and I said, I just can't read it anymore. I started to think about it. How many times have I said, I just can't look at this stuff anymore. I can't read it anymore. But I do, because it's the task that I've had. It's my task. I've said so many times, I don't want to be this guy. I can't continue to say this. And I have said to my wife that this journey has taken years off my life. It's so diametrically opposed to me. And people in the media don't believe it, and that's fine. There's so many people that have written that they don't understand that I mean what I say when I say, I don't want to be the guy saying these things. And while I don't think that that is the reason, I do believe that your body protects you. And I don't think it's a coincidence that I have said for so long, I can't read this anymore, and I can't look at this anymore, I can't say these things anymore. And I also believe that which you gaze upon, you become. Progressivism is the poison that's killing our Constitution. And the progressives had a 95-year plan to put poison into our church. Now you tell me, truth seeker, does that sound like it has come from someone who's sane or even has a working definition of sanity? No. So what Beck is doing is laying the groundwork for his defense. Because he knows that he is going to, already has, inspired who knows how many people to commit murder. It just hasn't happened yet that we know of. But like the jailhouse interview with two organizations, one liberal and one conservative, right? So you right-wing bastards who listen to this program say, oh, that's just that media matters. It's also at examiner.com. He's laying the foundation for his defense because Glenn Beck, in addition to being prone to suicide, prone to insanity, paranoid schizophrenia. I mean, do you need a better definition of paranoid schizophrenia than what I just shared with you from Glenn Beck's Friday Roadie radio program? Do you need a better definition of paranoid schizophrenia? I hate to have to do this. Oh, I don't like the burden. But God or Joseph Smith or the ruling council, somebody has tasked me to stand here in front of my chalkboard and show you how the Rockefeller Center and the Jew, George Soros, and the Tides Foundation and Barack Obama, the Negro, and gay people. Oh, I don't want this job. Oh, but I have to do it.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse. You belong. Nocturnal vacation.
Unnecessary sedation. 10 before the hour. Beck is, like I said, he's setting up a defense. Beck is the co-conspirator in trying to have people murdered in this country. Elaine writes, Beck refers to Soros as a spooky guy, and he talks about him in a kind of caricature, cartoonish German Nazi accent. And Elaine says that's how Beck mentions him at least three times a day. Without coming out and saying it, he insinuates that Soros is a Nazi killer who, of course, funds every Democratic cause, every candidate, every media and organization. Hopefully, Soros has major security because between Obama and Soros, Glenn Beck has portrayed Soros as the, quote, true leader, end quote, of progressives, not Obama. And progressives? In Beck world, they equal Nazi, Marxist, communist, baby killing, children blowing up in classrooms, spraying blood and brains over their progressive teacher and students, death camps coming for Christians, etc. Beck says all that is about to happen, all because of George Soros. Elaine writes, as I said in email last week, he was ramping up his violent rhetoric. I guess for sympathy, he talked about his illness today. Gee, I wonder why. Well, I believe it's because he knows eventually he is going to be held responsible for what he says. These kind of filth always are. Eventually they are. Randy in Seoul, South Korea writes, Mike, Beck is doing what Charles Manson could only dream about. Pit the whites and blacks and other people of color against each other in a war of class in which the low-income whites are fighting against their own best interests by supporting the people who are exploiting them. Randy in Seoul. And David writes, Huffington Post and Media Matters have some stories that this guy was going to the Tide Center in San Francisco, and he's a Beck follower in jailhouse interview, which we just talked about, David. When will Homeland Security shut down Glenn Beck since his rhetoric is dangerous and the biggest threat to the United States, worse than bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? What Glenn Beck does makes that group look like a Girl Scout troop. Yeah, of course. Glenn Beck is hell-bent on being the catalyst that causes a lot of blood, a lot of death and destruction, and for the same reason that Jim Jones was, and for basically the same reason that Charles Manson tried also. These are people without a moral sense. The power that people like Beck seeks is not political power. It's not rhetorical power. It's not religious power. That little exercise that he did at the Lincoln Memorial back in, when was it, September? I think that was the tipping point for Beck. I think that pushed him. And I mean, if you're a therapist, send me an email. Tell me if this is nonsense or if you think there's some truth to this. That was the tipping point. When Glenn Beck saw, whatever, 100,000 people out there who worshipped him, that validated every sick, creeping, crawling snake of an idea slithering around inside this madman's head. There was his confirmation. That's all he needed. If 500 people would have shown up, Glenn Beck probably would have gone to the basement and killed himself. But that's not what happened. So what Glenn Beck is looking for now is some way to externalize his paranoid schizophrenia. He wants to see it worked out by other people. Glenn Beck himself is not going to, you know, while he talks about the poisons and toxins coming into his body. Oh, Jesus Christ, is that classic? oh, my God. They're putting poison gas in my room. I don't know what to do. I didn't want this to happen. Oh, pray for me. Look, my hands are bleeding. Ah! This guy would never commit the murders that he's advocating other people go commit. Read between my sentences. Listen between my sentences. Listen. Please. Listen, help me. Beck would never go do it himself because, like most psychopaths, he's essentially so locked into his own craziness. It's not that Beck is a coward or brave. He doesn't have those kinds of emotions. He lives in here, inside this little space now, where everything is fairly easy to control, except for the poisons that are coming in and the toxins. And he's going out west. He was there today and tomorrow to be tested, to find out how it's getting in. From reading about progressives, it's coming inside me. Look, my hands are bleeding. Look at my feet. And you see the marks of the thorns on my forehead. Can somebody help me? Please. Yeah, I'd like to help you, Glenn. But, I don't know. I think it'd be more fun for you to stay alive, you sick son of a bitch, and really suffer through it. Ah! We'll be right back.
Truckers.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. Carl Paladino, who is running against Andrew Cuomo for governor of New York, Paladino being one of the sicker individuals that the Tea Party has vomited up and America has to deal with. Carl Paladino, every time he opens his mouth, he inserts another foot. And on Sunday, he was addressing a gathering in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, of Orthodox Jews. And he said at the time that children should not be, his word, brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is acceptable. As if, you know, I'd like to ask the same question that a lot of human rights advocates ask. At what point... do you make your choice to be heterosexual? When did you make that choice? You don't remember when you made a choice to be heterosexual? Why not? Obviously, it's a choice, right? When did you make a choice? You can ask a gay person to be homosexual. When did you make that choice to become homosexual? Hello? So the point being, of course, that if you, Mr. or Ms. Heterosexual, don't remember the time when you made the choice to be heterosexual, it's probably because you didn't make that choice. Eh? You think? And as far as a homosexual man or woman, probably the same thing. They didn't make that choice. Ta-da! I remember years ago, the more disgusting and contemptible of the Republicans, right-wingers, conservatives, and Christians, and Jews would say, and Muslims would say, well, you don't see homosexuality in the animal kingdom.
Well, the hell you don't. It's all over in the animal kingdom. You notice they don't say that anymore. Anyway, Carl Palladino, addressing a group of Orthodox Jews, said that children should not be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality was acceptable. And he criticized Attorney General Andrew Cuomo because Andrew Cuomo earlier this year marched in a gay pride parade. Now, this, I mean, here's Carl Palladino going to saying that by marching in a gay pride parade, Andrew Cuomo was setting a poor example for his children. What kind of an example does Carl Palladino set when he has a child out of wedlock? Since he's such a devout Catholic, he cheats on his wife, he cheats on his children, he impregnates another woman, he supports this other child, I guess. Not all that well, but here's Carl Palladino. This filthy son of a, this filthy piece of human waste, right? He's going to make the decision. Now, I wonder how many of the Orthodox Jews listening to him thought to themselves, oh, okay, Carl, you're right. You know, gay people, that's not normal. But you impregnating other women outside your marriage, that is? Stupid bastard. Palladino said, quote, I just think my children and your children would be much better off and much more successful getting married and raising a family. Like you have, Carl? Huh? These people are so saturated with deceit and hypocrisy, they don't even recognize it as this stuff comes bubbling out of their filthy, twisted little mouths. Right? Carl Palladino is going to lecture Orthodox Jews about, well, you're supposed to, a man and a woman get together and raise their family. Well, Carl, you're raising your family with your wife, and your way you're raising your family with your girlfriend. Maybe you have a point, you hypocritical son of a bitch. He was at Congregation Sha'arei Chaim, and he got applause when he said, quote, I didn't march in the gay parade this year, the gay pride parade this year. My opponent did. And that's not the example we should be showing our children. What is the example, Carl? You? Huh? Hi, honey. This is Daddy. Daddy loves Mommy. But Daddy has a girlfriend. And Daddy's boinking. That's a word you'll figure out someday. Boinking his girlfriend. And guess what? You're going to have a little brother or sister. No, Mommy won't be the Mommy. This other Mommy will be the Mommy. And, you know, yes, I'll be the Daddy. I'm the Daddy to you and to them. It, him, her. But Daddy's a good Catholic. Daddy's a good Christian. Daddy's a good conservative. So don't you ever, my children, think that homosexuality is normal. Daddy is normal. Now, while this filthy piece of human waste, Palladino, was talking to these brain-dead Orthodox Jews who just stood there, you can see the video, they just stood there, I thought they were davening, but they weren't. They weren't shaking their heads, they were agreeing with him. You know, hamana, 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 you know, it's like, what? Are you praying or are you agreeing? Hey, hiya. Became clear, since it wasn't the Sabbath, that they were agreeing. Shame. Shame on you. Meanwhile, nine attackers, ranging in age from 16 to 23 and calling themselves the Latin King Goonies, set themselves upon three people they believed to be gay. One was 30 years old, and the other two were 17. The 30-year-old was told there was a party at a house on Osborne Place in the Bronx. He showed up as instructed. He brought some malt liquor with him. What he walked into was not a party, but a night of torture. He was sodomized. He was burned, whipped. Punishment, his attacker said, for being gay. There were 9 attackers. Before setting upon their 30-year-old victim, they had snatched up 2 teenage boys whom they beat, the police said, until the boys, one of whom was sodomized with a toilet plunger, until the boys admitted to having had sex with the man. The attackers forced the man to strip to his underwear and tied him to a chair. One of the other 3 victims, the teenager, one of the teenagers, was still there, and the Goonies ordered him to attack the man. They forced the teenager to hit the man in the face, burn him with cigarettes on his nipples and his penis, as the others jeered and shouted gay slurs. This is the kind of people that Carl Palladino speaks to between the sentences, just like Glenn Beck. Then the attackers whipped the 30-year-old man with a chain and sodomized him with a baseball bat. The beatings went on for hours, and they were followed after beating these people almost to death. The Latin King Goonies performed a remarkably thorough attempt to sanitize the house. They poured bleach down the drains. They washed the walls. They got up all the blood. So 7 suspects were arrested on Thursday and Friday, and 2 were still being sought in what is arguably the worst hate crime in New York ever. They are charged with abduction, unlawful imprisonment, sodomy, and all elevated as hate crimes. Now, remember, there are Christian advocates who are saying that attacks on gay people should not be considered hate crimes. This country has gotten so goddamn sick, it's a wonder any of us can breathe.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it's a good word. It's 21 past the hour. A little bit more of this miserable Palladino and this attack on 2 17-year-olds and a 30-year-old because they were perceived as being homosexual. The idea, or I should say the 9 suspects that have been busted, I think there's one still on the loose, knew some or all 3 of the victims. The idea for the attack seemed to have been hatched last Saturday after one member of the group saw the 30-year-old man, whom the member of the group knew was gay, with a 17-year-old who wanted to join the gang. This is all according to police. Hours later, at 3:30 a.m. on Sunday, the group grabbed the 17-year-old, took him to the house, and slammed him into the wall, according to the cops. He was beaten, made to strip naked, slashed with a box cutter, hit on the head with a can of beer, and sodomized with a wooden handle of a plunger, the police said. And he was interrogated about the 30-year-old and asked if they had had sex. The teenager said that they had. The gang member set him loose, warning him to keep quiet or they would hurt his friends and family. The teenager walked into a nearby hospital and said he had been jumped by strangers on the street and robbed. At 8:30 on Sunday, the police said the group members grabbed a second 17-year-old, beating and likewise torturing him interrogating him about his contact with the 30-year-old. He, too, said he had had sex with the man. And then they got the 30-year-old to arrive for what he thought was a party. He was immediately set upon and tied up. Then the assailants ordered the second teenager to attack the 30-year-old, and they joined in the beating. The beating lasted hours. All three victims by last Wednesday night had given full accounts of the attacks, and for the next 36 hours, officers with the Hate Crimes Task Force worked up a list of 9 suspects. The suspects under arrest were identified as David Rivera, 21, Nelson Falu, 17, Stephen Carballo, 17, Dennis Pieters, 17, Byron Almonte, 17, Brian Cepeda, 16. They were being held by the police in the Bronx on Friday night with no arraignment scheduled. Still being sought are Elmer Confessor, 23, and Rudy Vargas Perez, 22. Did you catch the ages? This is what people like Carl Paladino unleashes. Just like Glenn Beck unleashes murder and mayhem, Carl Paladino unleashes this kind of violence. Carl Paladino wants to be the governor of New York. Glenn Beck wants to be, I don't know, the Messiah? Wasn't it Jesus who talked about in his moment of weakness, God, I don't want this role. Didn't Jesus say, wasn't he in the Garden of Gethsemane praying the night before his trial, that he, Jesus, didn't want the role that God, his Father in heaven, had thrust upon him? Doesn't Glenn Beck say he doesn't want this role that's been thrust upon him? Toxic narcissism, a messiah complex, paranoid schizophrenia, all rolled into one sick bastard who's on radio and television 4 hours a day, coast to coast, border to border, and you sick son of a bitches who listen to him and watch him and figure out that he has the truth. My God. If Glenn Beck is crazy, it is definitely a pathology informed by political intent. I have an email here from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. When we come back from this break, I'm going to share that with you. And then I'm going to do such an abrupt turn on this program, it's going to give you whiplash. But I want to tell you something about something that is so unlike what I've been talking about the first hour and a half of this show tonight and other nights. It's something about peace and calming, and it's not like Glenn Beck talks about it. It really isn't. You don't have to listen between my sentences. You don't. Just come back after the break, please. Please come back after the break. I don't want this role. God, please. I don't want. How many people showed up to hear me and see me and feel me and touch me? 200,000, 300,000, 500,000.
Just like a ghost, you've been a haunting my dreams. Now I'll propose on Halloween. Love is kind of crazy with a spooky little girl like you.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour is promised. Just a quick email here from Michael in Roswell, and then I'm going to share this thing with you, the Fairy Sand Project.
Ooh, what?
Michael writes, if Beck is crazy, it is definitely a pathology informed by political intent. By his saying that Soros ordered Halliburton to destroy the Deepwater Horizon rig, he accomplishes two things. Focusing on Soros diverts attention from the Koch brothers and their fellow billionaires, who are pumping huge amounts of money into the current campaign, and it helps make disappear the very real and ostensibly suspicious connections between Halliburton and Cheney. As well, by using the rhetoric of eliminationists and still claiming nonviolence, he's stage setting. As you say, that moderately big crowd in D.C. in August validated to him his status as a leader of a cult of personality. When he tells his viewers and listeners that he's being literally poisoned by liberal ideas, he's hoping that his followers infer from the threat those ideas pose to Beck that ideas are a public health menace and that he's under attack, and by extension, so are they, and that elimination of the people with those ideas is a public service. That's not pathologically crazy, to my mind. That's diabolical. The Nazis did something quite similar in propagandizing the German public to believe that Jews were carriers of disease and were a public health threat. Michael and Roswell. Yeah, the similarities between all of these at once crazy and extremely charismatic to a certain kind of person who has lost the inability to think for oneself. Poisonous rhetoric. Borderline personality disorder that flips over into paranoid schizophrenia, and so on and so forth. History is riddled with these people. And in every single instance, the damage they have done, either micro or macro, has been just incalculable. You know, we hear of 6 million who were burned to death in the gas chambers. But what about the other 44 million or 54 million who also died because of Hitler's insanity? Glenn Beck is a sick man. Very sick. And his sickness is the type that can metastasize so easily into the minds of people who have no defense. And the Jim Jones analogy is not far-fetched at all. Let's close the door on that. Slam! Bridget Wolf is one of our two ethics advisors or public editors, whatever you want to, however you want to put it. Along with Bob Alexander, I can't really think of a time when either of them has heard something on this program where I immediately got an email, or not immediately, but subsequent to the program, got an email that said, you know, you went too far. Maybe that's because Bridget and Bob are out there, too. I don't know. But anyway, that's who wrote this email. And that I'm about to share with you. And I'm sure you're familiar with their website, she and her husband, John's. If you're not familiar with Fairy Woodland, fairywoodland.com, you ought to go. You ought to go check it out. You'll see some amazing stuff. Our now six-year-old has, oh, hell, I don't know, three or four fairy houses and also little doors that you put on trees so that the fairies can open the door and go in. And I mean, it's amazing stuff. If you have kids or grandkids around 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, or older. I'm telling you, and they don't have one of these fairy houses. Well, hi, Mike. We need your help to get the last few pieces in place for a project that John and I have been working on relating to the BP disaster in the Gulf. It's the Fairy Sand Project. John and I, along with so many others, watched in horror last summer as the oil poured into the Gulf waters and as toxic chemicals were dumped on the oil, creating what we all knew would be an environmental disaster of monster proportions. And it is. I know it isn't on the front pages anymore, but the reports by Ricky Ott, Greenpeace, and many other environmental groups and Gulf state scientists affirm almost daily that the magical reports of the oil's almost all gone and everything's fine are horse blank. So, speaking of magical thinking, what does all this have to do with fairies, one might ask? Well, here it is. As the oil began coming ashore in the Florida Panhandle, a young woman who lives there read our website and noticed that each of our fairy houses is created in a bed of sand, sort of a metaphysical soup containing sand from special earth places around the planet. She, the woman in Florida, told us about her beloved special beach in Pensacola, which was being hard hit by the oil, and asked if she could send us some of the sand that was still clean enough to add to our sandbox. This is a huge container of sand where Bridget and John mix in sand from all over the world. Back to her email. She thought it could help heal the beach and the ocean to have that sand be a part of fairy homes. Her heartfelt impulse sparked an idea. What if we could gather sand from other waterways, from places other people loved, and add those to our sandbox? We could build a special fairy house from that sand and send it to the Gulf to live near the water, bringing with it the heartfelt blessings sent by all of the people who contribute the sand. Could that really help? We decided that it certainly couldn't hurt and was about as good as any BP or government plan we'd heard at the time. Besides, we happen to believe that love made into physical form is powerful magic. So we put out a call through our website, our mailing list, Facebook, etc., asked people to send sand. And they did. They sent sand from the East Coast, the West Coast, the headwaters of the Mississippi, from the Great Lakes, from Hawaii, from the sand trap on the golf course. And they sent sand from numerous beaches in the Gulf that they had gathered and kept for its beauty in time before the oil came. The sand came with sweet, touching messages about why this particular sand was special to them. And Mike, the sand was also beautiful. Now we're ready to build the houses and send them to their homes on the Gulf. Yes, the project has grown from one house to five, one for each of the Gulf states. And here's where we need your help and the help of your listeners who haven't yet tuned out because they find all this completely silly. Each of these homes is being built in a ritual way, honoring the energy of the natural materials that go into it. The purpose of each house will be to act as a touchstone, a gateway for the living energies of the natural world, what we call fairies, to gather and work in whatever ways nature spirits do to help heal the devastation we humans have created. Each house needs to live at a place within sight of Gulf waters and have a human guardian who will see to putting it in place and can look after it once in a while. We have places and guardians lined up for Florida, Alabama, and Louisiana, but we still need volunteers from Texas and Mississippi. If there is anyone in your listening audience from those states who might be interested in taking this project on, they can contact us through the website, fairywoodland.com, or by emailing me directly at bridget@fairywoodland.com. There's also more information about this project at our website. To be a candidate for this, you don't need to believe in fairies. You just need to believe in nature and be open to the possibility that nature is home to forces we've barely begun to understand. If these fairy houses sitting on beaches along the Gulf don't accomplish anything more than eliciting a smile from a passerby, they'll still have made a contribution. Thank you for getting the word out, Bridget. You understand what she's asking here. If you live either Texas or Mississippi, and you want to take on the responsibility. We're not talking about money here. We're taking on the responsibility of one of these incredible houses that John builds. You want to see how incredible? Go to their website, fairywoodland.com. Go there. Look at them. Marvel. But if you're interested, if you live near the water, if you live near the water in Texas or Mississippi, and you want to do this, get in touch with them. All right? Fairywoodland.com or Bridget@fairywoodland.com. We will we'll be back after this break. Is it time for a break? Yeah, it's time for a break. Go ahead. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
My one desire is to try not to cry. She might come back one day, by and by. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. Witchcraft's got me keep going down and down. Well, my head is spinning. Alone by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways. They are with us, you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, okay. 10 before the hour, coming up next hour, don't forget, we have a report from the wonderful world of art and how some people react to art. What else? The freak from a part of Ohio that I grew up in, who is a World War II reenactor, only he's on the side of the Nazis. It's not even World War II. It's just a bunch of often SS reenactments of doing what? I don't know. Murdering Polish Jews, gassing Lithuanian Jews, sodomizing and torturing Roma and homosexuals. I don't know. What do you do when you reenact like this crazy son of a bitch? What's his name? I've got it right here. Richard Ayotte, a former food industry executive. He gets involved in what he calls historic Waffen-SS battles. The only people I'm aware of, oh, I know, don't send me an email and correct me, that the Waffen-SS got involved with were against innocent, unarmed civilians, mostly Jews, a few Catholics, lots of progressives, you know, the kind that Glenn Beck says, are poisoning me. They're poisoning me. So that's what we're going to talk about next hour. You'll like the art part. Just remember these two words, Andre Serrano. Mark Perkel, who used to, we used to use his servers? Yeah, for our website. Until we switched to the company that we use now. Mark Perkel writes these quick editorials. And I'm on his mailing list still. He has the website Mark, M-A-R-C, mark.perkel, P-E-R-K-E-L .com, mark.perkel.com. He also runs a BartCops website, doesn't he? Yeah, he runs Bart, not his website, but the server that handles BartCops stuff. He writes, in this country, using the N-word is enough to get you virtually excommunicated from normal society, but using the N-word does not even come close to what Glenn Beck said recently about slavery. Glenn Beck said that slavery started with innocent ideas, and it was the government regulation that made it bad. Ah, oh, damn. Maybe I'm the only one who's paying attention, but it sounds to me that Glenn Beck is at least justifying, if not advocating, a return to slavery. But this time they'll do it right. And we'll have slavery that isn't in any way related, regulated by the government. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot? He actually said that? When it comes to racism, calling someone the N-word is nothing compared to suggesting that slavery started with innocent ideas and the attempt to completely dismiss the history of what happened to blacks in America with a false story that he just made up. What Beck did with this tale was 1,000 times worse than using the N-word. But what really blows my mind, Mark writes, is that the news media haven't called him on it. It is absolutely irresponsible to allow a statement like that to stand unchallenged. Mark Perkel. Go to his website, Mark, M-A-R-C, dot Perkel, P-E-R-K-E-L, dot com. Slavery started innocently, and it was the government regulated. You people don't think that Beck is insane? I mean, seriously, just totally a mad dog. And I understand that his time at Fox News is getting to the point where he's up for contract renewal. It'll be interesting to see if even as sick a son of a bitch as Rupert Murdoch wants to continue with this psychopath. A lot of people, it's out there in media, a lot of people that work at, if that's what you call it, at Fox News, if that's what you can call it, are becoming disturbed because Beck presents such a crazy face, where it concerns Fox News. And most people, like the guy that tried to murder people in California, wound up shooting 3 highway patrolmen. Most people who listen to and are inspired by Beck see the whole Fox organization as Beckville. So some of the news people, some of the people who work there and read this, what passes for news at Fox, have sent emails apparently to upper management, including Murdoch, that this has got to stop. That Beck has to be reined in. 296 advertisers have made it very clear they refuse to have their products advertised on Beck's program. That doesn't really mean anything. Beck's audience, I understand, has fallen by about 20%. Now, when you're talking about 2 million people, that's only 400,000 have disappeared, but they are disappearing. He has no audience in the 18 to 49 group. This is all older people. So there's no telling what's going to happen to this miserable son of a bitch. But the word is that even Murdoch, even an old fascist like Rupert Murdoch, is getting a little bit nervous about this Christer stuff and this Mormon stuff and this I am the Messiah and poison stuff is being pumped into my studio riff that Beck has been going off on. I know. A lot of people are listening, and I say, oh, goddamn, he's talking about Glenn Beck again. Yes, I am. Someone who has that much influence, as sick as it is, over that many Americans, deserves a little bit of objective focus, don't you think? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. As it always is, as a matter of fact, when I say welcome back, right? It's amazing. It's like being in a time warp. Groundhog Day, over and over again. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Have you ever been to Loveland, Colorado? Loveland, Loveland, Colorado? I have. And nice city. About 50, 60,000 people. It's always been a toss-up for me, which is better, Boulder or Loveland. But something very weird happened there last week. Last Wednesday, I believe. There is an art museum, rather quaint, in Loveland on Lincoln Avenue. I don't say quaint from a patronizing point of view. I'm just saying from a visual point of view. And there's an arts community described as a vibrant arts community in Loveland, Colorado. Perhaps not as vibrant as, say, Santa Fe, New Mexico, but, you know, vibrant. And the Loveland Museum Gallery had some art up last week. It was part of a lithographic print exhibition by the San Francisco artist Enrique Chagoya. And it showed a depiction of the historic Jesus engaged in what some people thought was a sex act with another man. And a lot of people demanded its removal. Other people argued that Chagoya, who's also an art professor at Stanford University, where wasn't Condoleezza Rice the chancellor there? I think she was. Anyway, he is a professor, art professor, at Stanford. That's what your father was before he retired, right? Art professor at...
Not Stanford.
But in Colorado. In Colorado. And people argue that Mr. Chagoya had the right to create what he pleased. If you didn't want to see it, don't go see it. But last week, last week, after or during public debate over the exhibit and daily protests in front of the museum. Now, you can imagine who's out in front of the museum protesting a piece of art, right? In the middle of all this, a woman from Montana, who's described as a 56-year-old truck driver named Kathleen Folden, walked into the gallery wearing a T-shirt that read, "My Savior is tougher than nails, goddammit." Okay, not the goddammit, but "My Savior is tougher than nails." I just thought I would add the expletive there because I've never heard such nonsense. "My Savior is tougher than nails." What the hell does that mean? I don't know. I guess back in the day, a lot of people thought Zeus was tougher than nails and able to hurl thunderbolts. And I'm starting to digress, and I don't want to do that. Anyway, Kathleen Folden walked into the gallery in her T-shirt. She walked up to the exhibit, took out a crowbar, and proceeded to smash the plexiglass casing. Smash! 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 When she had succeeded, she grabbed hold of the lithograph and ripped it up! Rip! 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 Witnesses said people were asking her, "Why are you doing this?" And she answered, "Because it desecrates my Lord." "My Savior is tougher than nails"
You know, somebody might take offense to that because wasn't, in, according to the mythology, wasn't her savior nailed to a cross? Wasn't that the means of execution? My savior is tougher than nails. Well, not really, lady. I mean, they nailed him to a tree and he died. So I don't know there. That's a little bit weird. Your T-shirt might be a little blasphemous to me.
Imagine if somebody would have strode up to Mrs. Folden and started pounding on her T-shirt with a crowbar and then ripped it off and tore it into pieces. I don't know. Anyway, she said, in response, why'd you do this? She said, because it desecrates my Lord. Now, the print itself, part of a series by Mr. Shagoya called The Misadventures of Romantic Cannibals, shows the head of Jesus Christus. Now, nobody knows what Jesus looked like. I mean, what are we talking about here? A depiction of Jesus. The most common depictions of Jesus are all like the one that used to adorn my grandmother's sitting room wall right above the piano. And it was a picture of this gorgeous man with long flowing blonde ringlets, deep blue eyes, skin like milk and honey, holding up his, was it his right hand or his left? I'm not sure. But he was holding up his right hand, kind of a blessing. And he had on an azure blue robe over a white tunic. I used to look at that picture when I was a kid, and I used to think, oh, my God. Well, you weren't allowed to say, oh, my God, in my grandmother's house. That would get your mouth washed out with lava soap. So I would just stand there and go, I used to think, man, what, even as a kid, I thought he was beautiful. Now, of course, when I got older and realized that this person that the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims refer to as Jesus was really kind of a short, swarthy, dark-haired, dark-skinned, kind of a Mediterranean face, which means probably protruding lips, a big nose, strange-looking bug eyes from having been chased around the Middle East, dirty, skin mottled. In other words, nothing like the Jesus that adorned my grandmother's parlor wall. But anyway, in this particular depiction, it shows the head of Jesus. His eyes are rolled back. And he is atop a mostly clothed woman's body. Uh-oh! A man's head, tongue out, is near the woman's legs. The Spanish word orgasmo. I'm not going to translate that for you because I don't know if I can say it on the radio. The Spanish word orgasmo is displayed in the background. Now, the artist, Mr. Shagoya, said he intended the image to be viewed as a commentary on corruption in the Roman Catholic Church. Ta-da! Not a sex act involving Jesus. He added that he was shocked at the reaction, especially because the art had been displayed elsewhere without incident. Now, there's more on this, which I'll share with you in a second. So we have Mr. Shagoya, Enrique Shagoya, who is an art professor at Stanford, puts together an exhibit showing the corruption in the Roman Catholic Church. And God knows the Roman Catholic Church is corrupt, always has been. We know this. But the truck driver from Montana walked in and whipped out her crowbar and said, "This desecrates my Lord."
Jesus is just all right.
21 past the hour. So anyway, let me recap here. Enrique Chagoya, art professor at Stanford University, put together an exhibit, a lithograph, that was offensive to a 56-year-old Montana truck driver named Kathleen Folden, who walked into the gallery, saw the exhibit. She was wearing a T-shirt, by the way, that said, "My Savior is Tougher Than Nails," walked up the exhibit, took out a crowbar, smashed the plexiglass casing, and then ripped the lithograph to pieces. And when asked about it, she said, "Well, because it desecrates my Lord." The print itself, part of a series called The Misadventures of Romantic Cannibals, shows the head of Jesus, eyes rolled back, atop a mostly clothed woman's body. A man's head, tongue out, is near the woman's leg. The Spanish word orgasmo is displayed in the background. And Chagoya said he intended the image to be viewed as a commentary on corruption in the Roman Catholic Church, not a sex act involving Jesus. Now, this is very more than faintly reminiscent of Andre Serrano's depiction called Piss Christ. Remember that? It was a crucifix submerged, partly submerged, into a jar of what the artist claimed was his own urine. And, oh, my God, did people go nuts, totally missing the point that the... And Serrano, who claimed to be, and I don't know about this guy, but Serrano, who claimed to be a practicing Catholic, said that he was sick and tired of, I'm paraphrasing here, sick and tired of the misuse of the teachings of Jesus Christus by so-called Christians, hence the depiction. But, of course, he was accused of blasphemy, and it's a wonder he escaped with his life. Now it's this guy. Now it is Enrico Chagoya. Chagoya said, "I fear for the safety of the museum and the people associated with it. I think religion should be about peace and loving, especially Christianity," end quote. Mr. Chagoya, I mean, you don't show your disdain for the corruption of the Catholic Church this way. I mean, just withhold your money from the poor box, I guess. Initially, according to the Times, the image, which was part of a considerably larger exhibition involving nine other artists, provoked little reaction. But then, a Loveland City Council member, Daryl Klassen, began getting complaints about the print, many of them calling for its removal, particularly because it was displayed in a museum supported by taxpayers. Oh, no! Mr. Klassen said, quote, "I wanted it removed because I knew it had the great potential to be highly offensive to a large segment of the community," end quote. The museum, seeking to mollify the villagers who were starting to gather pitchforks and lighted torches, decided to post a small sign near the image warning visitors that the art could evoke strong reaction. But that did little to appease those who wanted it removed. You know, you show me art that doesn't evoke strong reaction, and I will show you garbage. Is that not what art is supposed to do? Oh, my God! No, Mike, it's not. Art is supposed to be a nice, quiet picture of a valley with a mountain in the background and a couple of sheep frolicking. All right, but you see, if over in the corner of that very picture you just described, you have a wolf eating the sheep's mother, then you have art! Because it evokes something there, doesn't it? The two little lambs cavorting while the wolf over in the corner is devouring the mother. That is art. Because it speaks to a particular emotional subset. Anyway, last week, out in Loveland, a local deacon. Not a gas station attendant, not a Walmart employee. A local deacon began to help organize protests outside the museum. And last Tuesday, people packed a city council meeting in Loveland, Colorado, to speak out on the exhibit. Mr. Klassen, the city council member, estimated that most in attendance were opposed to the image.
the Reverend Ed Armijo, a deacon at St. John the Evangelist Catholic Church in Loveland, said, quote, "It is deeply offensive to see our Lord depicted that way. It is our position that this is not art, it's pornography," end quote. How do you know that's your Lord, since there is no real image of him available anywhere? Maybe that was just the artist's rendition of a fake Lord? I don't know. Anyway, there's more here from Mr. Armijo. Armijo? I guess it's Armijo. The deacon at St. John the Evangelist Catholic Church. The evangelical Catholics are almost as dangerous as evangelical Protestants. More in a second. Stick around. This is a good story. Stick around.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I just find this story odd and weird on several different levels. I don't think there's ever been a period in time when art did not provoke reactions from people who view it, certain works of art, even music. But the visual arts, of course, are the ones that seem to play hell with people's concept of reality or non-reality to the greatest degree, right? So here we have, once again, an artist using a popular depiction of Jesus Christus in a setting that the artist is using to talk about hypocrisy or corruption of this religion that was put together a couple thousand years ago, especially the corruption and hypocrisy that you find in both evangelical Protestantism and Catholicism. Are there two more institutions more corrupt than those two where it concerns the teachings or the preachings or the examples of their favorite avatar or their only avatar? To me, there is not. In the first place, the entire Bible has been edited and altered. Huge chunks and sections and gospels and writings eliminated because they didn't fit properly with the founding fathers of this corrupt religion, the founding fathers' interpretations vis-a-vis, and this comes from the Jewish tradition, also the silence of women, the non-usefulness of women in general, and certainly stricture upon women to shut the hell up. Don't talk, don't say anything. So any gospels, any writings that were written by early members of the early writings by women of this church were totally suppressed, completely suppressed. Christianity, I do believe, started as a very feminized religion. It was a feminine religion in terms of its the miracles. It was women who experienced the miracles. The men were just kind of along to pull the donkey. You know, it was women who it was a feminized religion. It was a feminization of the masculine religion of Judaism. So when artists try to show how corrupt and vile this religion has become, and keeping in mind, of course, as you're listening to me that I am against all religion. I think they are all vile and corrupt because they insist on their non-corruption. They insist they are not vile. They insist that their belief structure is the only belief structure if you want to redeem your soul, which will soon be cast into everlasting fire. Yada, yada, yada. Having stated that, though, a million times on this program, I've also said that there are redeeming qualities to certain religious thought, not exclusively found in religious thought. You can find the same redeeming qualities in just about any philosophical approach to life, right? Okay, so Andre Serrano, and in this case, Enrique Chagoya, use their interpretive abilities as artists to show the corruption of Christianity. And what happens? Wow, man, damn, people go just a little bit crazy. What are you doing? My Jesus is stronger than your Jesus. Yeah, my Jesus is tougher than nails. Ah, how's that grab you? Well, by the short hairs, actually. But anyway, so we have this big dust up in Loveland, California, Colorado, where the artists put this exhibit up inside the Loveland Museum Gallery. And pretty soon a city council member gets a hold of it. And then a couple of preachers get a hold of it. Next thing you know, there are people out in front going, oh, Lord, the world will collapse because of what this artist has done. Hallelujah. Somebody give me an amen. And a lot of people do. Now, the woman who walked in with the My Jesus is Tougher Than Nails t-shirt and a crowbar and smash the hell out of this exhibit, so to speak, she faces a criminal mischief charge, which is a fourth-degree felony in Colorado. I guess it's like jaywalking. She was released from jail on Thursday after someone anonymously posted her $350 cash bond. It's a miracle! She told the police that she had driven from Montana with the sole purpose of destroying somebody else's property. Isn't there something in the Ten Commandments about that? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass, which has a lot of interpretations, but tends to mean, no, I'm not going to go there, Kathy, stop. Tends to mean, you know, you shouldn't be jealous of what somebody else possesses, even if it's a work of art. But apparently that commandment just didn't play for this woman. So anyway, off she went. To smash, burn, loot, tear, rip, bomb, explode. Well, not all that stuff, but you know what I'm saying. The Loveland Cultural Services Director, Susan Eisen, says she felt her word sick over the print's destruction and also over the protests. She said, this makes me sad for many, many reasons. She also said that given the hundreds of hate messages that the museum had received over the image, the museum decided not to display another version of the print. Then she said, again, this makes me sad for many, many reasons. Yeah. Other people in Loveland, Colorado, have reacted to the uproar with disbelief at just how far the discourse has gotten. The museum's Facebook page apparently has been overrun with heated messages coming from both sides. A local artist, Sheldon James, posted, quote, "My hippie artist friends are outraged. I didn't want it to be censored. My more traditional artist friends say that the city should have been a little more careful in how it was displayed," end quote. My hippie artist friends. Well, art is art. And as the country drifts inexorably and continuously toward fascism, which is how the United States is devolving, we will get there eventually. You know it. I know it. And as we approach American fascism, art that is challenging has to be destroyed. Has to be destroyed. This is where the big mistake that freaks like Glenn Beck talk about the Soviet Union as being left-wing. The Soviet Union was never left-wing. It was in its fullest flower, a fascist state Joe Stalin and the rest of the boys established fascism. They called it communism. It was no more communism than left is right or up is down. But Glenn Beck understands the absolute inability of his brain-dead followers to make any type of discernment about these different subjects and topics and words, that it's easy for him to say what he says. But then Glenn Beck is in deep trouble physically anyway. So fascism dictates that art shall reflect the glories of the state. And the state, of course, is the corporate state. And any art that deviates from that. And the corporate state in America, this is what is relatively unique, if such a phrase can be put together, something either is unique or not, but let's, for the hell of it, relatively unique, is the fact that corporate fascism, in the American version, promotes this crazy Christianity. Why? Because it is a wonderful yoke to keep people in line. It's the same way that the white slave owners allowed the African slaves to use Christianity and promoted its use. Why? Because it's a great way to keep people in line. This is your lot. This is what you will do while you're alive. And once you die, God, Jesus and the angels will reward you, but only if you are a good slave or a good consumer or a good Christian or a good quiet American. Shut up. Don't say anything. Do what you're supposed to do, and eventually you get your reward. So, the destruction of, not the corruption of art, but the destruction of art. If art is not about free expression, ooh, gee, this sounds like Art 101. If it's not about free expression, then what is it about? If art is not to challenge, what is it to do? If art is not to shock, what is it to do? If art is not to question, challenge, shock, invert, convert, pervert, what is it supposed to do? Is it supposed to reflect what the state says it should reflect? So anyway, to Enrique Chagoya and once again to Andre Serrano, way to go, guys. Before the hour. Now I don't watch anything on Fox. I on the Fox channel, because I understand that if you expose yourself to disease, you can catch it. You can absolutely catch the diseases that you expose yourself to. And the last thing I want is the kind of transmittable mental disease that occurs when you spend any amount of time watching Fox. So what happened on Fox News Sunday comes to me by way of a correspondent. I don't watch it, but apparently Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is the Democratic Party's chief deputy whip in Congress, was on that program with Eric Cantor. And Cantor, I believe, is the number two man in the Republican party in the House. And Wasserman Schultz said to the Republican that the Tea Party had a stranglehold on the Republican Party, and in particular, she went after what she called the despicable recruitment job the Republican Party has done with candidates about whom damaging stories have surfaced. I mean, you take a look. We talked about Carl Paladino earlier in the program. Is there a more effed up, crazy rat bastard than Carl Paladino? Look at Sharon Angle. Look at the I'm not a witch lady. These people are insane. This is what the Republican Party has turned into, a collection of morons. You know, I thought people like what's his name from Kentucky who's married to Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell. I thought McConnell was about the slimiest, scummiest, and these freaks that come out of Texas like Tom DeLay. But good God, some of the people that have been recruited by the Tea Party ownership and Fox Channel ownership of the Republican Party have just been astonishing, astonishing. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz said to Cantor, you have a disturbing trend in the corrupt and pretty despicable recruitment job the Republicans have done, where they have candidates that have been accused of sexual assault in recent weeks. I mean, it just doesn't stop with these rat bastards. That's the end of the quote from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She said, quote, you have one candidate in Ohio who actually thinks it's a good bonding experience to reenact Nazi battles with his son. And she went on to say, these are the Republican Party's top tier candidates that are in their so-called young gun program. Schultz was referring to the in the first example, the Republican Tom Ganley, who is challenging two-term Democrat Betty Sutton in Ohio's 13th District, which is Akron and Cleveland suburbs. A woman filed a sexual assault lawsuit against this freak, Tom Ganley, saying he made unwanted advances towards her in his car dealership office. Oh, he's a car dealer. Oh, fancy that. The Republican Tom Ganley denied, quote, every allegation made in this baseless lawsuit. End quote. And his campaign said he wasn't even at his office at the time of the alleged assault. Oh, really? You weren't at your office? Well, there you go. Then that proves that the woman's crazier than a loon. The second reference was to Richard Ayotte, a former food industry executive. Don't you love those people? Who became a subject of controversy when the Atlantic magazine website printed a photo of him in a German Waffen-SS uniform that he wears in historical reenactments of battles in which he participates with his son. Yeah, German Waffen-SS. I mean, if you want to do battle reenactments, why not do, oh, I don't know, the Civil War? Why not do the War of Mexican Independence? Why not do something from the Canadian wars against Indians? There you go. Or against the British. But Waffen-SS? When that story broke, Ayotte told the Toledo, Ohio newspaper, quote, there's a bunch of guys that do Roman legion enactments. They don't endorse feeding Christians to lions. Oh, I see. So you can dress up as a Waffen-SS and it doesn't mean anything. But the people who do Christian or do Roman legion reenactments, and who does that, by the way? They? You're drawing a comparison because nobody accuses them of throwing Christians to the lions in their enactments? But you see, Christians and the Roman legion reenactments were about more than just throwing Christians to the lions, whereas the German Waffen-SS was strictly about executing the Jews and the Poles and the Czechs and the Italians and the French and the people from Luxembourg and the Danes and the Brits. And do you get the point, you dumb bastard? So the guy Ayotte, Richard Ayotte, is challenging 14-term Democratic Representative Marcy Kaptur in the Ohio district that includes Toledo.
Waffen-SS. People in the great or the big sky country who drive down to Colorado to destroy a piece of artwork that depicts the corruption of Christianity. Apparently, this woman who had on the sweatshirt, "My Jesus is tougher than nails," I guess she would like it to the corruption to remain. We live in interesting times, do we not? Wait a second, that's a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why are